11. Shafa, lying down. Him again. I wish he hadn't done so much to you. You don't like being him to any degree. You will like less knowing that he is part of Nasun. But don't think about that right now. The man who still carries the name of Shafa, even though he hardly qualifies as the same person, dreams fragments of himself. Guardians don't dream easily. The object embedded deep within the left lobe of Shafa's sesapine interferes with the sleep-wake cycle. He does not often need sleep, and when he does, his body does not often enter the deeper sleep that enables dreaming. Ordinary people go mad if they are deprived of dreaming sleep. Guardians are immune to that sort of madness. Or perhaps they're just mad all the time. He knows it's a bad sign that he dreams more often these days, but it cannot be helped. He chose to pay the price. So he lies on a bed in a cabin and groans, twitching fitfully, while his mind flails through images. It's poor dreaming because his mind is out of practice and because so little remains of the material that might have been used to construct the dreams. Later he will speak of this aloud to himself as he clutches his head and tries to pull the scattering bits of his identity closer together. And that's how I'll know what torments him. I will know that he thrashes. He dreams of two people, their features surprisingly sharp in his memory, though all else has been stripped away. Their names, their relationship to him, his reason for remembering them. He can guess, seeing that the woman of the pair has ice-white eyes rimmed with thick black eyelashes, that she is his mother. The man is more ordinary, too ordinary, carefully so, in a way that immediately stirs a suspicion in Shafa's guardian mind. Ferals work hard to seem so ordinary. How they came to produce him and how he came to leave them is lost to the earth. But their faces are interesting, at least. Of warrant and black-walled rooms carved into layered volcanic rock. Gentle hands, pitying voices. Shafa doesn't remember the hands or voices' owners. He is helped into a wire chair. No, the nodes were not the first to use these. This chair is sophisticated, automated, working smoothly even though something about it seems old to Shafa's eye. It whirs and reconfigures and turns him until he is suspended face down beneath bright artificial lights, with his face trapped between unyielding bars and the nape of his neck bared to the world. His hair is short. Behind and above him, he hears the descent of ancient mechanisms, things so esoteric and bizarre that their names and original purposes have long been lost. He remembers learning around this time that original purposes can be perverted easily. Around him, he can hear the snuffling and pleading of the others brought with him to this place. Children's snuffling and pleading. He is a child in this memory, he realizes. Then he hears the other children's screams, followed by and mingling into whirring, cutting sounds. There is also a low, watery hum that he will never hear again, yet it will be very familiar to you and any other origin who has ever been near an obelisk, because from this moment forth, his own sesapine will be repurposed, made sensitive to orogeny and not to the perturbations of the earth. Shafa remembers struggling, and even as a child, he's stronger than most. He gets his head and upper body almost free before the machinery reaches him. This is why the first cut goes so wrong, slicing far lower on his neck than it should, and nearly killing him right there. The equipment adjusts, relentless. He feels the cold of it as the sliver of iron is inserted, feels the coldness of the other presence within him at once. Someone stitches him up. The pain is horrific, and it never really ends, though he learns to mitigate it enough to function. All those who survive the implantation do. The smiling, you see. Endorphins ease pain. Of the fulcrum, and a high-ceilinged chamber at the heart of Maine, and familiar artificial lights that march toward and around a yawning pit from whose walls grow endless slivers of iron. He and the other guardians gaze down at a small, shredded body crumpled at the bottom of the pit. Every now and again, the children find the place. Poor, foolish creatures. Don't they understand? The earth is indeed evil, and it is cruel, and Shafa would protect them all from it if he could. There is a survivor, one of the children attached to Guardian Lachette. The girl cringes as Lachette approaches, but Shafa knows Lachette will let her live. Lachette has always been softer, kinder than she should be, and her children suffer for it. Of the road, and the endless flinching eyes of strangers who see his ice-white irises and unchanging smiles and know that they are seeing something wrong, even if they don't know what it is. There is a woman one night at an inn who tries to be intrigued rather than frightened. Shafa warns her, but she's insistent, and he cannot help but think of how the pleasure will keep the pain at bay for hours, perhaps the whole night. It's good to feel human for a while. But as he warned her, he circuits back in a few months. She's got a child in her belly, which she says isn't his, but he cannot permit the uncertainty. He uses the black glass poniard, which is a thing made in warrant. She was kind to him, so he targets only the child. Hopefully she'll pass its corpse and live. But she's furious, horrified, and she calls out for help and draws a knife of her own as they struggle. Never again, he resolves as he slaughters all of them. Her whole family, a dozen bystanders, half the town as they attack him en masse. Never again can he forget that he is not and never has been human. Of Lachette again. He can barely recognize her this time. Her hair has gone white and her once smooth face is all over lines and sagging skin. She's smaller, her softening bones compressing her into a hunched posture, which often happens to Arctics when they grow old. But Lachette has seen more centuries even than Shafa. Old is not supposed to mean this for them. Feebleness, senescence, shrinking. Happiness and a smile that means something other than mere mitigation of the pain. They're not supposed to have these either. He stares at her broad, welcoming smile as she hobbles toward him from the cottage to which he has tracked her. He is filled with dim horror and a burgeoning disgust that he's not even aware of until she stops before him and he reaches out to reflexively break her neck. Of the girl. The girl. One of dozens, hundreds. They blur together over the endless years, but not this one. He finds her in a barn, poor, frightened, sad thing, and she loves him instantly. He loves her too, wishes he could be kinder to her, is as gentle as he can be while he trains her to obedience with broken bones and loving threats, and chances he should not give. Has Lachette infected him with her softness? Maybe, maybe. But her face, her eyes, there's something about her. He is not surprised later when he receives word that she is involved in the raising of an obelisk in Alia. His special one. He does not believe she is dead after. Indeed, he is filled with pride as he goes to reclaim her, and as he prays to the voice in his head, that she will not force him to kill her. The girl, whose face causes him to wake with a soft cry. The girl. The other two guardians look at him with the earth's judging eyes. They are as compromised as he. More. All three of them are everything the Guardian Order has warned them against. He remembers his name, but they do not remember theirs. That's the only real difference between him and them, isn't it? Yet they seem so much less than he, somehow. Irrelevant. He pushes himself up from the cot, rubs his face, and heads outside. The children's cabin. It's time to check on them, Shafa tells himself, though he makes a beeline to Nasun's cot. She's asleep as he lifts a lantern to examine her face. Yes. It has always been there in her eyes and maybe cheekbones, tickling his mind. The fragments of his memory and the solidity of her features finally coming together. His Demaya, the girl who did not die, reborn. He remembers breaking Demaya's hand and flinches with it. Why would he do such a thing? Why did he do any of the horrible things he did in those days? Lachette's neck, Timae's, Aitz's family, so many others, whole towns of them. Why? Nasun stirs in her sleep, murmuring softly. Automatically, Shafa reaches out to stroke her face, and she quiets at once. There is a dull ache in his chest that perhaps might be love. He remembers loving Lachette and Demaya and others, and yet he did such things to them. Nasun stirs a little and half wakes, blinking in the lantern light. Shafa?
It's nothing, little one, he says. I'm sorry.
Many degrees of sorry. But the fear is in him, and the dream lingers. He cannot help trying to expunge it. He finally blurts,
Nasun, are you afraid of me?
She blinks, barely lucid, and then she smiles. It untwists something within him. Never.
Never.
He swallows, his throat suddenly tight.
Good. Go back to sleep.
She drifts off at once, and perhaps she was never really awake to begin with. But he lingers near her, keeping watch until her eyelids flicker into dreaming again. Never.
Never again, he whispers,
and twitches with the memory of that, too. Then the feeling changes, and his resolve refocuses. What happened before does not matter. That was a different Shafa. He has another chance now, and if being less than himself means being less than the monster that he was, he cannot regret it. There is a quicksilver lightning strike of pain along his spine, too fast for him to smile it away. Something disagrees with his resolve. Automatically, his hand twitches toward the back of Nasun's neck. And then he stops himself. No! She is more to him than just relief from pain.
Use her, commands the voice. Break her. So willful, like her mother. Train this one to obey.
No, Shafa thinks back, and braces himself to bear the lash of retaliation. It is only pain. So Shafa tucks Nasun in and kisses her forehead and puts out the light as he leaves. He heads for the ridge that overlooks the town and stands there for the rest of the night, grinding his teeth and trying to forget the last of who he was and promising himself a better future. Eventually, the other two guardians come out onto the steps of their cabin as well, but he ignores the alien pressure of their gazes against his back.